I'd like to begin today by offering a land acknowledgement. So I invite you to settle in. All right, we're going to settle in. It sounds like it's on now. Okay. Take a breath and notice how these words land for you. We collectively acknowledge that we are practicing cultural humility. For those of us in the Twin Cities, we acknowledge that we are living and practicing on stolen Dakota and Anishinaabe traditional, ancestral, and contemporary lands. For those of us in other parts of the world, we take a moment to reflect on the Indigenous peoples of those lands. We acknowledge the genocide and displacement perpetrated by the U.S. government against Native Americans and the colonization that continues to this day. We invite all of us to consider land acknowledgement as an ongoing practice. And for those of us who are not Native American or American Indian, a commitment to curiosity and engagement with the lives, justice movements, and sovereignty of the Native nations of this territory and beyond. We invite ourselves to make efforts to learn and take action when and where we can as bodhisattva activity. I would also like to make an ancestor acknowledgement. I'm here today only through the great efforts of my blood ancestors and spiritual ancestors. And I count among my spiritual ancestors those who first brought Buddhism to this country, even if they're not in my direct lineage. Some of my spiritual ancestors suffered greatly at the hands of our government for practicing the religion that I now so easily engage in. I bow in deep gratitude to all of them. So the title of my talk today is The Dharma of Gender, but really that's too big. So I'm focusing in particularly today on transgender and gender non-binary, the dharma of that. And I'm speaking about this because some of our dear Sangha members who are transgender or gender non-binary have asked us to help make this Clouds in Water a more welcoming place for them and others. And since all of us have a gender, this does apply to everyone. Dharma of gender. But those of us who are cisgender might not feel this way immediately. We might not feel, oh, this applies to me. So just some quick terms. Gender, first of all, what is gender? What do we mean when we're saying gender? So a person's gender identity is their knowledge of themselves as a woman, a man, or a person out of the binary. So that's what I'm talking about when I say gender. And cisgender people are those whose gender identity aligns with societal expectations of the sex they were assigned at birth. And I'd like to begin with reading a little bit from an article in Tricycle Magazine that was an interview with Kevin Manders. Kevin is one of the editors of Transcending, a book called Transcending, Trans Buddhist Voices. And he is a queer trans Buddhist living in Vancouver, British Columbia, and has been on the Dharma path for the last 14 years in the Theravada tradition. So this is one of the questions Tricycle Magazine asked. Say you're speaking to a cisgender heterosexual practitioner who isn't necessarily homophobic, but isn't particularly interested in issues related to gender or sexual identity either. How would you respond if they asked how gender or sexuality are relevant to their Dharma practice? So this was his answer. I would first thank the person for being honest and trusting enough to ask the question. Then I would share that understanding our own gender and sexuality is part of Dharma. The relative truth of our identities are important on a day-to-day basis. I would encourage the person to try to get curious about their gender and sexuality and see what may come up and sit with that. They may be surprised. He goes on to say, also, the intersectionality of our identities make a big difference to our lives and in our sanghas. And I'll just make a brief comment about intersectionality in case people aren't familiar with what that is. So this refers to the interconnected nature of social categorization, such as race, class, and gender. So for example, my experience as a woman and the way women are oppressed is going to be different from the experience of a Black woman, because for her, there is the intersection of sexism and racism. And this is important for us to understand. And so there's many different ways in which all these different identities and expectations and biases intersect. So to be aware of that. And so then Kevin, first when he says, okay, let's be aware of how our identities make a big difference, the intersectionality of that. He goes on to say, some people deal with oppression, discrimination, and harassment due to gender or sexuality, and others do not. I would let them, and this is the original question, was speaking to a cisgender heterosexual practitioner who's wondering how gender and sexuality are relevant to the Dharma. He says, I would let them know that reflecting on their gender and sexuality would help not just them, but the greater Sangha. The more comfortable we are with ourselves, the more comfortable we are with others. We need to know ourselves fully and authentically, which requires work before we can start to understand the absolute truth of non-self. So for those of us who are cisgender, there might be a like, well, I know who I am. I know about my gender. I don't, you know, there's not a sense that we have to explore it. So the invitation is, well, why not explore it anyway and see what comes up? Because then we could really have the possibility of fully and authentically understanding and knowing ourselves. And then that is going to have an impact on how we interact with others. And that we have to do that work first before we can understand the absolute truth of no self or non-self. So yesterday, some of us were discussing Katagiri Roshi's teachings on the three stages of mountains. And Katagiri Roshi, for those who don't know, is we consider our honorary founder of this temple. He's my teacher's teacher. And this teaching on the three stages of mountains is very famous, and he's not the one to come up with it, but it's the one that's mountains. First, mountains are mountains, then mountains are not mountains, and then mountains are mountains again. And I want to have a shout out to Kikon for the transcript on Katagiri's talk on case 36 of the Blue Cliff Record, in which Katagiri spoke about this. I don't know if Kikon is with us on Zoom, but in any case, thank you. And thank you to also the participants in the group that were exploring this. So I thought of this because of this idea, like first we understand and know ourselves, and then we can open to the truth of non-self. And then, so that's the first is mountains are mountains, knowing ourselves. And the next is non-self, mountains are not mountains. And then we'll talk about the third stage also. I want to say also, Katagiri, before he even started talking about this, said, actually, these three stages are all working simultaneously. So it's not like you achieve one and you go to the next and you go to the next. Although he said temporarily, we talk about it like that, because that's how our human brains work. But to understand that actually it's all happening. So then he says about the first stage. The first stage, mountains are mountains. This is a very common understanding of mountains and you. Between you and the mountains, there is a very dualistic aspect of human life. So first of all, you have to initiate moving toward the mountains through your six consciousnesses, seeing, hearing, communicating, or doing something with the mountains initiatively. You have to take initiative. You have to move first. Otherwise, the mountain doesn't come up to you. This is really a human delusion, which no one can escape. So this delusion of there's me here and the mountain there. He says, but delusion is important for us. Without delusion, we cannot understand anything. So in this instance, and in what I'm talking about today, the Dharma of gender, I'm saying sometimes the mountain that we need to move toward is our own self, knowing ourselves fully and authentically, as Kevin Manders mentioned. It can also be knowing and understanding others, moving toward others by deeply listening, finding out what we can know, opening our hearts. So the mountain might also be understanding transgender and gender non-binary folks. Maybe you could think of it that way as I'm reading the next part from Katagiri. So first of all, you have to move toward the mountain. But this is delusion because there is still some gap between you and the mountain. So you have to completely project yourself into the mountain. That is called empathy. You have to empathize yourself to the mountain. In order to empathize you into the mountain, it really requires your enormous effort beyond your sense of like or dislike. Enormous effort, enormous attention, enormous energy to move toward it. So from this first point, mountains are mountains, no one can escape human effort. Every day you have to make every possible effort to live in this world. So part of living in this world is understanding ourselves and our world, understanding gender, race, class, all the things that define us and divide us and also connect us. And today I'm emphasizing gender. Understanding gender, and especially understanding the human beings who manifest as transgender or gender non-binary, means taking the time to listen, to respect the pronouns that they have asked us to use, and not to depend on them to tell us everything, but also do our own research into how we can be a good ally. So I say us, but I'm kind of talking about the cisgender people when I say us in that way. But also, everyone can move toward taking time to listen, respecting each other, how we want to be treated. But in particular, since I'm talking about transgender, I want to say some things that we can do that will help us completely project ourselves into the mountains called empathizing with our gender nonconforming Sangha members. And as Katagiri said, it might take enormous effort, but out of love, maybe we will do it. So here's a few things. One is, if you're comfortable with sharing your own pronouns, do so. So we kind of have had a practice of, I didn't say that, and I don't think I have it in my bio. I'll need to move it into my bio. So my gender pronouns are she, her. When I'm on Zoom, I automatically have that, my gender pronouns listed there. And a lot of times in groups, when we go around and introduce ourselves, we ask people to say their names and if they're comfortable sharing their gender pronouns to do so. Sometimes people aren't comfortable for various reasons. So we're not saying it's forced. But if you do, especially as a cisgender person, share your pronouns, that way it normalizes sharing pronouns so that it's not only the trans people who are sharing theirs. So it just makes everyone feel more comfortable and welcome. So sharing your pronouns is one. And then the next is trying your best to remember and use the pronouns that other people have shared. If you make a mistake, correct yourself briefly and move on. If you hear other people making a mistake, interrupt them with a quick response. So not making a big deal, just say the, you know, oh, them, oh, she, oh, he. And it's especially helpful if you do that, as you're not the person who's been misgendered. If you observe it, and then you as an ally, someone else can, you can say that. That really feels supportive. Another thing is, don't complain about how hard it is. But it is hard. It can be hard. I say for me, it can be hard. And if you need support for the fact that you're having a hard time, maybe it's better, and not maybe, it's better to get support from your cisgendered friends, not from the person that you just misgendered. So just say, I'm just having a hard time. This is someone I've known for 20 years as this gender, and now they're asking to be another gender. My brain just doesn't seem to work. So process that, but not with that person, with someone else. If someone corrects you, the best thing to do is say, thank you. Not even, I'm sorry. It's best to just say, oh, thank you for correcting me. But you might feel sorrow and you might say sorry. But if you do, don't apologize profusely. Because what that happens then is you're kind of making it the other person's job to make you feel better about misgendering them. So just say, oh, thank you for correcting me. Sorry. I'll try better next time. Move on. So these are specific examples of ways that we can have that moving toward this mountain of understanding and connection and moving toward empathy. And when we engage in that empathy, whether it's around this or anything else, but when we engage in that empathy, we can actually enter the next stage where mountains are not mountains. This is where we have an empathy that is so deep that there's no self separate from the other. There's no self and other. There's no this and that. And in this way, our binary view of the world disappears. And I'm not just talking about gender binary, but just in general, the separated view disappears. And mountains are not the idea of mountains. So they're not mountains in that usual sense. Katagiri says about this stage, you can experience this if you really take care. He uses some other examples here. If you really take care of your job, your occupation, even cleaning the floor, washing your dishes, everyday life, at that time, the dishes are not dishes. The dishes are exactly you. You are drawn in completely by the dishes, the function of the dishes, the function of the mountains. So I might add the function of the person you're interacting with. That person, that relationship is also exactly you. But at this second stage, it's unconscious. It's practicing like a fool, like an idiot, in the good sense. But we shouldn't stay here. expending energy to cultivate empathy, to move toward understanding, to climb up the mountain is part of our practice. And then reaching that top of the mountain, that mountains are not mountains, where the mountain's released from our idea of it, that's part of practice. But it's good to keep going, to come down from the mountain so the mountain can be a mountain again. This is the third stage. So I'll read from Katagiri again and just suggest when he says mountains, you can think Sangha members, people in my life, and in particular, we're sort of bringing into consciousness people in my life and Sangha members who are trans or gender non-binary, but can be also just people as we're interacting. So when he says mountains, think of that. At this third stage, you are completely, entirely drawn in by the mountains. The mountains give you lots of information. You very naturally communicate with mountains and you can learn a lot of things. In other words, you can hear the voiceless voice of the mountains speaking to you. The mountains speak to you through the materialistic aspect of the mountains themselves instead of you wanting to listen. Anyway, the mountains speak to you, so you can learn lots from the mountains if you do this, if you reach this stage. When you learn something from the mountain's life, at that time, it's really something wonderful, something more than joy, but anyway, joy. Or in Zen, maybe that is called enlightenment, Satori. So that's from Katagiri. And I think usually most of us imagine that being at the top of the mountain, at that stage where mountains are not mountains, and there's this unconscious and flow sort of connection, that would be what we call enlightenment. But no, enlightenment is actually the third stage, coming down from the mountains and engaging exactly in the relative activity of things. So Katagiri goes on to say, Satori, or enlightenment, is not something complicated you have to learn. Satori is found in the very simple movement, which is exactly fit into the rhythm of life. You and the mountains fit together. At that time, there is full communication between you and the mountains. So there's a lot more great stuff from Katagiri, but I want to kind of close with something else and make sure there's time for discussion. So this is, I think it's online as a draft. And anyway, Katagiri transcripts is the, if you Google that, you can find a lot of good stuff there. Kikan's been working hard at getting the transcripts of many talks from Katagiri that weren't transcribed before. So I'd like to, there's a few more things to share. One is I'd like to share another transgender voice. So this is also an article from Tricycle Magazine. It's Buddhist teacher and practitioner, Catriona Reed. She came out as, quote, a woman of transgender experience in her article, Coming Out Whole, that was published back in 1998. And then Tricycle interviewed her recently, a couple years ago. So this is a little bit from that interview. Tricycle asks, you made a point in your article that passing within a stereotypical gender binary isn't necessarily the goal of transitioning. Did ideas of non-duality inform your view? So she says, very much. Non-dualism lays the ground for questioning any binary system. In our context, normative, heterocentric notions regarding sexual orientation and gender. Non-dual implies no binary. No doubt there's an ethical component too, refraining from judging others based on an unexamined inherent binary and notions about people, situations, and events. She goes on to say, for decades, I thought if I meditated more, my issues about being trans would miraculously go away. teachings on anatta, no self, and emptiness are often taken to imply that the way we experience ourselves and our identities is not real. I certainly took it to mean that. I felt that if I assimilated the teachings of no self or emptiness, somehow that would fix everything. I later realized that the way no self was being taught was misleading. No self doesn't mean I don't exist, but the everyday language of no self implies that you don't exist. Some people take that to mean that your concerns or cares are not real. Somehow you should find a way of practicing to overcome that. There is a prevailing tendency to deny the reality of conditioned experience. So I would just like to insert here that treating someone's concerns or cares, or our own concerns and cares, as not real is not true Zen practice. And this applies to gender, race, and all the ways that people suffer and are oppressed. All of these may be delusions, and they are delusions according to the teachings, but we need to take care of our delusions and not try to imagine them away. So another question that Tricycle asked is, or they said, a possible byproduct of greater tolerance for people who are transgender and non-binary is that cisgender people may feel less beholden to society's expectations of performing their gender correctly, and everyone may experience greater freedom. How do you think society would benefit if people stopped clinging to gender as immutable and defined at birth? And she says, hugely. It would be a dream. I think there's a lot we have to cover prior to that, though. And whether genderqueer people who do not subscribe to a binary gender distinction are Buddhist or not, that's going to be the case. In conversations I've had walking around the world, I'm surprised by two things. First of all, people say, oh my God, you're the first transgender person I've ever met. And then they ask me incredibly impertinent questions. I'm usually patient with them. On the other hand, the second thing many people say, or other people say, is, oh yeah, I've always questioned whether I'm really a woman or whether I'm really a man. So it's a huge shift and threat for some people. And for some other people, it's quite normal and natural. It's a big relief. They may not be transgender, but they may be uncomfortable with the binary or maybe looking for a greater ability to relax in the ambiguity they feel in their own identity. Even if they're heterosexual or they present as female or as male, they are in some other way queer. Queer in the sense that they question how the world perceives them. So, but what about if we're in that first category of, oh my God, you're the first or one of the first transgender people I've met, and then we have all these impertinent questions that we don't understand. So I'm asking, if we're cisgender, what can we do that would really help us understand transgender dynamics? So my mind went to a story from the Vimalakirti Sutra in the chapter called The Goddess. So this is a long sutra and a long chapter. I'm going to be really brief because then I'm going to shut up and let other people talk. But there's this really kind of wild story in there. So Vimalakirti, the sutra overall, I think is a very apocryphal story in which many bodhisattvas and Buddhist disciples miraculously fit in this very small room. That the lay teacher, famous lay teacher Vimalakirti is teaching from. And in chapter 7, Vimalakirti and Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, are having this Dharma exchange, and it's so deep and wonderful that this goddess appears. It's like, oh, I want to be there for this Dharma. And then Shariputra, who's also a Buddhist disciple, engages the goddess in a dialogue. And at a certain point, he asks her, what prevents you from transforming yourself out of your female state? And just as a background, it was thought that females were unable to become a Buddha. So it's kind of a legitimate question in that way. It's like he's seeing this female body person, and then she also has this deep wisdom and understanding. So he says, well, how come, why don't you transform yourself? What prevents you? So the goddess answers him from the stage of, I think from the stage of mountains are not mountains. So she says, Reverend Shariputra, if a magician were to incarnate a woman by magic, would you ask her, what prevents you from transforming yourself out of your female state? Shariputra says, no, such a woman would not really exist. So what would there be to transform? The goddess says, just so, Reverend Shariputra, all things do not really exist. Now, would you think, what prevents one whose nature is that of a magical incarnation from transforming herself out of her female state? Thereupon, the goddess employed her magical powers to cause the elder Shariputra to appear in her form and caused herself to appear in his form. Then the goddess transformed into Shariputra, or just say to a male, said to Shariputra, transformed into a goddess, Reverend Shariputra, what prevents you from transforming yourself out of your female state? And here is Shariputra's answer. I no longer appear in the form of a male. My body has changed into the body of a woman. I don't know what to transform. But she goes on, the goddess, still transformed as Shariputra here, goes on to teach about the emptiness of form and how there's neither male nor female. But I think it's really good to pause and put ourselves in Shariputra's shoes. Especially if we're cisgender, this can be a way of helping us to maybe understand. If we were suddenly transformed into a different biological body, how would it feel? Well, if we're transgender, we might feel euphoric. If we're cisgender, we might experience a taste of what it's like to live every day as a person who has gender dysphoria, a distress and discomfort when the gender you identify with conflicts with the sex you were assigned at birth. So that happened in this case to Shariputra through the magic of the goddess. So in the end, in this story, the goddess released her magical power and each returned to their ordinary form. So Shariputra did not have to continually suffer from gender dysphoria. And also the goddess demonstrated a trust that it is really possible for a female to become Buddha. So this idea of needing to transform into a male in order to become Buddha is bogus. So she's like, no, I'm not going there. I'm going back to, you know, the relative world. The mountains are mountains in this third stage, and just be myself and let Shariputra be himself. But with a greater understanding now, because we've been at that stage of mountains are not mountains. All right. I think I haven't left enough time for questions. And I'll just say in closing also, one of the things that we're going to do very soon is roll out new name tags for everyone that will have plenty of space for people to write their pronouns, or maybe we'll even get stickers that so it can be really easy for people. We had hoped to do that like coinciding with this talk. We didn't quite get it organized, but it will be happening soon. So thank you so much for your kind attention. And I'm interested in questions or comments. And I turned the Zoom completely off. In case anyone from Zoom wants to speak. Oh, you did it too. We did overkill. And you know what? Oh, it is recording. Good. I was thinking about that. Great. Okay. Questions, comments?
So, Sun, I just want to thank you.
Oh, it's Ty. Okay. Hi, Ty. You're welcome. I should see who else is on Zoom. Because I thought maybe my kid was going to be here, but it looks like they're not. Oh, well. Yes.
So my question is about the third stage where mountains are mountains again.
Yes.
Because it's always where I struggle with the concept of non-dualism.
Uh-huh.
It's like there isn't a language to express that third stage. The way I learned non-dualism was it's not two, mm-hmm. but it's also not one.
Yeah.
So you reach stage two where it's empty and there's no difference. There's mm-hmm. no, it's non-binary.
Yeah.
But stage three, there is both binary and non-binary.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm interested in how that manifests in what you're talking about with interacting with mm-hmm. people who are non-binary in their gender.
Well, it's pretty hard to talk about how it actually manifests. So it's more, I mean, I think Katagiri said something like, when you come to that third stage or come down from the mountains, it kind of looks the same as it did in the first stage, but it's somehow not the same. So I guess all I can say is that when you, if you're in a relationship with someone, when you first start that relationship, so any kind of relationship, there's maybe a like moving toward trying to understand the person. And then there may be a part time in the relationship when it's like there's a sense of this intense communion or connection that's beyond, like you feel yourself drop away and no distinctions. So that can happen. But then you can't just stay there, because then it's like, well, somebody has to make dinner, and you know, I mean, there's things that, so then you enter into that next stage, if you will. But there's that, the sort of the workings of the first two stages are present. And so then the quality of the relationship and the interaction is quite different. Yeah. So that's the best way I can say it.
I have a nephew who's transitioned their mm-hmm. gender, and their parents are struggling and everyone's struggling and it's kind of estranged from the family.
Mm.
And so I would like to go see them. And I think, and thinking about what you're saying, is like, if I sat down with them, we'd start with the first stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second stage is, well, there isn't a difference between us. So we have something we share,
mm-hmm.
but then we get to that third stage where it's, well, we have something we share, but we also are different. And if I don't recognize both of those things, I can't really make an authentic connection.
Yes. Yes. That's great. Yes. Zach and then Kathleen.
I was thinking about that third stage. And I guess part of the way that I understand it is that unless there is separateness, there is like love is not possible, right? And I think there's something really wonderful about coming to that third stage and saying, coming down from the mountain and saying, like, isn't it wonderful? Like, we were the same, but now, like, you're wearing this costume and I'm wearing this costume. And isn't this so much fun that we get to like wear these different costumes with one another?
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's good.
That's good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Kathleen.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, how sometimes sometimes I don't know what it means, to the practice of wisdom. But it sounds like the third stage, like it's a transition to be able to practice wisdom, that there's wisdom in this.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's easy to forget, you know, so to speak, that I have that capacity, perhaps, to practice being wiser and pull back into this, you know, ego identity, and then we cause that separation.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you talk about, you know, couples or people that get, you know, attached, that you see that where they temporary or lose their attachment in that being able to not perceive the, you know, the oneness, and so to speak. Yeah, so it's really skillful also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like the number of times Katagiri said you can do this, because it can seem, but he did also said it can take enormous effort, but that you can do this. He didn't say you might be able to. It's like, you can do this.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
A couple of comments on Zoom. Shall I read them?
Yes, please.
From Martha, Sosan, the practical advice for cisgender people to engage effectively with transgender non-binary people when we make a mistake with pronouns, etc., is very helpful. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Pat says, your topic today reminded me of Rick Field's poem, When the Buddha Meets the Goddess. It's also a statement of non-dualism in delightful form.
Okay, so that's something people might want to look up, the poem When the Buddha Meets the Goddess. Thank you, Pat. Anyone else? Yes, Carla.
You know, years ago when I came out as a lesbian, it was just this great sense of freedom. And I felt my silence, I had to pay a price for a long time for my silence. And I just really want to welcome all here and on Zoom and people who are transitioning. And I hope that they come to feel a great sense of freedom like I have.
Mm-hmm.
It's really special and important for their, or it was important for my health, not my overall, every kind of health aspect. So I just wish the same for them.
Yeah, and also right now with so much hatred and backlash in society in general, it seems so important that our Sangha, our community, can be a welcoming place where people can feel a relief to be themselves. Thank you. Yes,
Yoshin. When you say that, create a welcoming place, maybe we'll say this in the announcements, but I and I are leading a warning of practice for queer folks, anyone in that large bucket. We both are in that bucket, and we're extending our hearts to include that, to create a safe space for practice and for exploring the Dharma together. And what does that mean to practice Dharma in these bodies and in these times together?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll be quite lovely. Everyone in that bucket is welcome, and everyone else is welcome to offer your kind support.
And that's, I think, the first Saturday in June, is that, or the second Saturday in June.
In the morning, and the sign-ups on the website.
Yeah.
Just one, couple things. when I think of, there's a couple of things to see if I can make it sense. When you are coming together, I think of a heart opening. And a lot of times when we do sesshin or when we do certain practices, it's one of our ways of trying to see where we're at if our heart is kind of broken open, right? So you're coming together, your heart is open. And then I think when you're coming down from that, and that's when there's no mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're coming down from the mountain, Katagiri talks about perfume and trying to, you know, you're left with a perfume of that, and that perfume is liberating, you know. So I just, and brought up love and brought up liberation. And I think, you know, love, the coming together, liberation, coming down from the mountain. And then how all of that can be, that's how they can all be working at the same time, right? As our hearts are broken open and we're coming together and we're liberating as we're coming down from the mountain, but the mountain is coming together. I mean, that's how it works all at once in a practical way.
Yes, great. Yeah. Thank you. All right.